That's Chris Rath, the principal of Roundlett Junior High School in Concord, and she's a friend of Krista McAuliffe. She says, as we heard, that she had even kidded Krista about the danger. Of course, in addition to Krista McAuliffe, the first teacher in space, the crew included Commander Dick Scobie, Pilot Mike Smith, Ron McNair, Greg Jarvis, Ellison Onizuka, and Judy Resnick. Several of those people, veterans of space travel, but of course at the time when Challenger exploded, all the expertise and all the training and all the skill in the world couldn't have helped them. This was out of their hands. Chris Fraser, a CBS radio affiliate WKXL, was at Concord High School in New Hampshire this morning to cover the shuttle liftoff.
To say everything is extremely upset right here. They have asked the students to leave the auditorium. There are spent noisemakers littering the floor right now. The children walked out of the auditorium in more or less a state of shock, needless to say. No one knew what happened right when it went up. As Jim said, when the second explosion more or less happened, everyone thought it was just part of the, maybe a booster or something. No one knew. Everyone was cheering as the launch went up. The students were asked to leave as soon as the explosion was announced. The students were asked to go back to the class, and the media has been asked to clear out. As I said, there are streamers and confetti littering the floor here right now. Everyone is extremely upset. One, as soon as there was noise continuing throughout the launch, everyone was screaming. As soon as the word that something went wrong, the room became absolutely silent. There was not a word spoken by anyone. The students filed out in absolute silence. Many of them just with shocked, stunned looks at their face. I had asked yesterday and today many of the students if they were at all nervous, aside from being just excited that Krista McAuliffe was going into space. And I didn't have one student tell me that they were worried or concerned. I guess these things have just become so routine that the thought of danger never even enters anyone's mind.
Chris Fraser, a teacher's triumph turned tragedy in a matter of minutes. Christopher Glenn at the Kennedy Space Center has been talking with somebody from Krista McAuliffe's hometown. Chris?
Yes, it's Jim Rivers of WKXL, also the Concord, New Hampshire station, who's been down here to take a look at the launch and has been sharing some of our studio space with us. Jim, any further insight into the way Concord feels about this?
Well, again, Chris, as we mentioned earlier, I've been in contact with the city, and it's desolate. Everyone, we talked to a caller on a talk show this morning, and he said you thought that the town had been evacuated. Everybody was in front of TVs, and so this is an event that people aren't just going to read about in the papers. It's something that everybody saw as it happened, and a lot of us in Concord are rookies, as I said earlier, in seeing this, and as Chris Fraser has indicated, when we saw the ball of fire, we all thought it was part of the whole event, and everybody is just sitting back and praying and hoping that there are seven people out there in the water somewhere. We've had a couple of calls to the studio here in the building in the last few minutes from concerned people. We had a call from a young boy who wanted to talk to someone and asked if the apple had anything to do with it. It just thoughts that are going through people's mind.
A member of the closeout team outside the rocket just before Krista McAuliffe got aboard this morning handed her an apple for the teacher.
Yeah, yes. And this young listener said, did anyone check the apple? So everybody is saying, why? What happened? What went wrong at this point?
Well, as we heard from NASA's George Diller, it may be months, literally, before we get any firm answers to that. He did have an indication, at least he said it appeared that one of the solid rocket boosters on the rocket assembly had a premature separation and thereby unstabilized the dynamic configuration of the rest of the flight. Jim, what do you suppose will happen in Concord as a result of this, looking beyond the immediate astonishment and the stunned nature of the people up there? What will happen in the weeks ahead in Concord, do you think?
The city of Concord is a strong community. They've been through things like this in the past, and they'll survive and go on living. But I think it's going to be a long period of mourning for Krista McAuliffe and her crewmates. And I'm not sure if we will ever totally recover from this. Because, as I say, everybody in the community, bar probably none at the point of liftoff, were watching, or listening, and everybody found out together.
Yes. Yesterday, of course, New Hampshire's young governor, John Sununu, was down here hoping to watch the launch, and then they had a weather delay yesterday, and he had to go back to Concord last night. Is there any word from him yet about this?
He has not made a statement yet. We expect to hear from him soon. I know that our news department have been in touch with his office, and he will be coming out with a statement. A lot of the people in Concord, the school superintendent, Mark Bovey, the school board president, Mike Dunn, were down here. They have gone home. I talked with Susan Anderson, a teen teacher out in Idaho, with Barbara Morgan. Idaho people were down here. They've all gone home to watch it on TV.
Well, it was about an hour and 2 minutes ago that Shuttle Challenger, less than a minute and a half off the launch pad, exploded in flight. The fate of the crew is still officially unknown. Explosion. It was an awful long way down, and the water there is quite deep. They're about 20 miles offshore, so it's going to be a long time before we get any information on what has happened to the crew, but it does not appear too bright for their survival at this point. Judy Muller in New York.
Yes, Chris, CBS News correspondent Ike Pappas in Washington is in the office right now of the congressman who was on the previous shuttle flight, Congressman Nelson. Ike?
Yeah, I'm listening.
What is Congressman Nelson's reaction to this?
Well, Congressman Nelson, Bill Nelson, the Florida Democrat, who only 9 days ago returned to Earth aboard the Challenge, the Columbia, sat in his office watching the liftoff of the next shuttle, Challenger, on a closed-circuit NASA monitor. Congressman Nelson has not emerged from the office as yet, but his press secretary is telling us that when the explosion occurred, there was nothing but silence in the room. Congressman Nelson is the chairman of the Space Science and Technology Subcommittee. He is meeting with the staff of that subcommittee at the moment. His press secretary says that no one said a word in the room. Comments will have to wait, according to Congressman Nelson. Congressman Nelson is quoted as saying, "I need time to get everything together." So he has scheduled a 3 o'clock news conference today when he can possibly shed a little bit more light on what occurred aboard that shuttle. Congressman Nelson, you know, understands the frustrations that must have been felt by the crew members of the Challenger, including Mrs. McAuliffe, because it took, I believe, if my memory serves me, I guess 7 scrubs they went through on Columbia, and then it took them, I guess, 3 or 4 times before they could safely come down aboard Columbia. So he understands what the frustrations were and probably what the perils were in this kind of a mission. So for the moment, I think we have to wait to see what Congressman Nelson discovers and what his reactions to this event are.
Ike, despite the tragedy, that the president reportedly plans to go ahead with his State of the Union message tonight. And Larry Speaks said, "I'm certain the president will feel compelled to mention this, and depending on the outcome." I imagine Senator Jake Garn will be following events today with some interest, too, as he was the first politician to go into space.
Absolutely. I believe that Senator Garn, as a matter of fact, has scheduled a news conference for 15 minutes from now, and will be giving his reactions and telling us perhaps what he knows about and what he has learned from NASA, because these astronauts are tied, in perpetuity to the NASA Control Center for every launch, because they can contribute and they can learn from these launches themselves, even if they have been in space. And I'm sure that Senator Garn is feeling what Senator Nelson is feeling. I'm sorry, Congressman Nelson is feeling, and people who are feeling all over the world who have been close to this space program, and those of us who have covered the space program over the years are feeling a great sense of tragedy and loss at this moment. And there's no question, although Bill Nelson has not articulated that yet, there's no question from the tone, from the mood, from the sense, from the atmosphere in his office, that there is a great aura of grief and dismay at this event. And certainly the president is going to, it should be assumed that he will certainly mention this in some form this evening.
Ike Pappas on Capitol Hill. CBS News Pentagon correspondent Chris Kelly is also standing by. Chris, what have you learned there at the Pentagon?
So far, the main recovery effort seems to be underway by the Coast Guard. They have a couple of ships in the area there, along with aircraft availability to see what they can achieve there. At the same time, the Navy says two ships that happened to be in the general vicinity, they weren't there on station, they weren't there on duty, but they were in the general location, are now rushing toward the disaster area. One, we're told, is about 45 minutes away. A hydrofoil, which carries about 21 men. Another ship, a U.S. Guided missile frigate with 200 men, is steaming toward the location, but that ship is a good 2 hours away. So the Navy will go there, assist the Coast Guard in whatever recovery and search efforts they can achieve. In addition to that, a Navy official said that, as best they could tell, there were no Soviet ships in the immediate area. We don't know if the Soviets this time were off the Florida coast, well off the Florida coast, I should say, watching this launch. They have been out there in the past. Whether they were there this time is unknown, but at least we know in this case that there are no Soviet ships in the immediate area of the disaster, and as best the Navy can tell, there were no ships anywhere around because, of course, that area had been cleared prior to the launch. Judy?
Thanks, Chris. I'd like to ask you to stand by for just a moment. We need to go down to the Cape now. Christopher Glenn has been trying to follow developments. Chris?
Yes, Judy. We just had another report from Mission Control while you were talking with Chris Kelly, and it has concluded, and we're going to turn that tape around for you and play that back in just a moment here. Jim Rivers of Station WKXL in Concord, who's been speaking with us, has been down here for the launch and has been speaking with us about the reaction in Concord, has told me a moment ago that the students at Concord High School who had been gathered in the auditorium to watch a large screen TV version of the launch and had been cheering and saw this thing happen in front of their eyes have now been dismissed for the day as of 1 o'clock, and they will go home to be with their families. Now we have this tape just within the last 2 minutes or so from Mission Control. Let's hear that.
This is Mission Control, Houston, at 11:48 a.m. Central Standard Time. Recovery teams are searching the impact area off the coast of Launch pad 39B, where earlier this morning on ascent we had an incident approximately 1 minute after ascent, an apparent explosion as the space shuttle had shortly before I reached a throttle back position. The range safety teams were unable to get rescue teams, the search and rescue teams, delayed in getting into the area because of debris continuing to fall from very high altitudes for as long, almost as an hour after ascent. Those teams in place now in the search area. Additional information as it becomes available to us. This is Mission Control, Houston.
So again, a rather skimpy report from Mission Control on what they know right at the moment. We're looking at pictures provided by NASA cameras aboard a helicopter, apparently in the search area, about 20 miles offshore, and they do show some yellowish streaks in the water, but no visible wreckage or debris of any kind. I presume that some of those yellow streaks are chemical residue from the main fuel tank or from the orbiter's fuel tanks itself. One very poignant shot that they had was looking back over the water toward the land, and in the very distant horizon you can see the very noticeable beacon and profile of the vehicle assembly building where they put these things together in a vertical configuration and then roll them out to the launch pad. But as of now, we know very little else about the fate of the crew members, except it's probable that none of them survived this tragedy today. And we do have some word from NASA spokesman Jim Mizell, which has been gathered on tape, and we'd like to play that tape for you now.
Everything looked perfectly normal, and it looked like about 1 minute into the flight, and at that point, it appeared to have a disintegration of a part of the shuttle system. At that time, we could not tell whether it was a solid rocket booster or the main orbiter or anything else. My first impression was that we were getting ready to have a perform a return to landing site, because something occurring at that point is normally what would have occurred. In a few moments, it became obvious that, that we could see nothing coming out of the explosion that was headed back toward Kennedy Space Center. So it became obvious that the pieces were going to fall in the ocean. And from that point on, that's about all the data that we had. We did hear that there was some impact of some of the orbiter somewhere 20 miles downrange, and the Air Force has dispatched helicopters to the site, and we have no report as to what they have found, or we have had no report on the cause of the apparent explosion.
Jim, was there any indication at all that the shuttle was in distress at any point?
From what we have heard from Mission Control and from the engineering people at this time, there was no indication as to what occurred. There was a statement that there was an explosion, and really that statement was not very clear as to exactly where did the explosion take place and why. So I think they're going to be evaluating data for quite some time before they release any information, and certainly they're going to have to hear from those people in the rescue area before there's any can be any speculation as to the status of the crew or the orbiter.
Jim, tell us about that rescue operation. Tell us where the paramedics were flown in from, and tell us about the operation.
Well, as you're well aware, we launch into a section of the ocean that is controlled by Central Control for the Air Force. It's the Eastern Test Range, and this is all controlled by Patrick Air Force Base, and they have a range safety control at Cape Canaveral. We had a helicopter force on standby that normally patrols this area doing missions or doing shuttle launches, and those same helicopters were available and were in patrol at that time. And this is not something we do for this mission, but we do it for every mission. So the Air Force really handles all of our search and rescue as far as any contingency or emergency operations are concerned. And that plan was put into effect immediately as soon as it became apparent that something was wrong. And at the present time, we have not heard from them on anything decisive as to what they found or what they're seeing at that point out there.
Have there been any indications at all from the rescue team?
There has not been any indication at this time, to my knowledge. I suspect they are setting up a team to evaluate what's going on, and they're probably much in closer touch with the rescue team than we are here.
That's Spokesman Jim Izell. Thank you. And that tape provided by Frank Motek of our Miami affiliate WINZ. And Frank, you're in the studio with me now. Did you find out anything else over there at the press center?
At the moment, they're still trying to learn as much as they can from the rescue team that has been dispatched to the area. The faces still tell the story of shock and disbelief. At this point, everyone is waiting to get more information from that team that's been sent out there.
A couple of other things I think we ought to mention at this point. This launch of Challenger this morning was from a new shuttle launch pad a couple of miles due north of the one that they've used for all of the previous shuttle launches. Everything there had checked out perfectly, and of course, since the explosion occurred a minute and 15 or 12 seconds into the flight, that didn't really seem to have anything to do with it. The new launch pad was supposed to give NASA much greater flexibility for this year's crowded launch schedule, but of course, at this point, it doesn't appear that they will have a crowded launch schedule at any rate. There also had been a number of days of delays of this launch, as NASA, exercising its customary caution, would not fly when it was raining. They would not fly when the crosswinds on the ground were blowing too hard. That was yesterday. There was a brief holdup for an hour this morning before launch while they waited for ice to clear off of the shuttle vehicle, and of course, none of those factors seemed to enter into it either. Judy Muller in New York.
To recap once again, the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded about 2 minutes after liftoff from Cape Canaveral and plunged into the Atlantic some 60 miles away. The fate of the seven-member crew, including teacher Krista McAuliffe, is unknown, but it's unlikely that any of the astronauts have survived. We do not know that for sure. It appeared the rocket booster may have separated prematurely and exploded, but that is not known for sure. In fact, nothing is known for sure. In the words of NASA spokesman George Diller, It just happened. In addition to McAuliffe, a teacher from Concord, New Hampshire, the crew includes Commander Dick Scobie, Pilot Mike Smith, Ron McNair, Grave Jarvis, Ellison Onizuka, and Judy Resnick. The Senate has scheduled a prayer session for this afternoon. The White House, as President Reagan watched in silence, a replay of the accident. The president was described as saddened and anxious to have more information, as the nation is saddened, in shock, and we fear a nation in mourning. This has been a CBS News special report. I'm Judy Muller, CBS News.
CBS News, I'm Dick Reeves.
There was a bright flash, and we could see flame going off in three directions, and then nothing.
A horrified eyewitness to the space tragedy at Cape Canaveral, the shuttle Challenger exploding in the skies over the Atlantic about a minute after liftoff, apparently killing all seven people on board, including New Hampshire high school teacher Krista McAuliffe. Christopher Glenn is at the Cape. He was a witness to the disaster. Chris, do we know much more now than we did when the spacecraft blew up?
No, we don't, Dick. At this point, it's still rather inconclusive as to exactly what happened. One of the NASA spokesmen speculated to us a little while ago that it appeared as if one of the solid rocket boosters, there are two of them on every rocket configuration for the shuttle that goes up, it appeared that one of them had separated from the rocket assembly prematurely and gone its own separate way, and that, of course, caused the rest of the spacecraft and the rockets to run amok in the sky and eventually for that assembly to fall into the ocean. It's not known at this time whether by some miracle the shuttle Challenger, the orbiter itself, was intact after the explosion and was somehow able to separate from the main fuel tank and the other solid rocket booster and somehow perform an aerodynamic glide down in and ditch at sea. We're looking at pictures from NASA cameras over the crash site in the Atlantic right now, and all they show there is a few yellowish streaks in the water. Appears to be some kind of chemical debris from the crash itself, perhaps spent fuel or something like that, but no sign of any large chunks of wreckage, and certainly no sight of the orbiter.
Well, were there efforts, obviously, to get the rescue people there, but it took some time, did it not?
Yes, they had some people nearby, but from the altitude at which the spacecraft was traveling when the explosion occurred, it would take the debris, all of it, some 15 minutes to fall into the sea. That was how high up in the air they were. So they were prevented from entering the actual crash site until perhaps 15 or 20 minutes after the explosion and after they had scrambled to get underway to get out there. They just had to hang back and wait to go in until everything had finished falling from above them, which possibly could have hit them and compounded this tragedy.
And of course, it seems so long, so agonizingly long since it happened, that those of us who are waiting and hoping wonder what's going to happen now, what will happen now.
Now NASA has impounded all of the telemetry, all of the data, and all of the voice tapes from the flight, and they will be analyzing them very carefully over the next days, over the next weeks, over the next months, and it may be a very long time indeed before we get any official version of what happened here today. What was immediately apparent, as you said, was what we could see with our eyes. This rocket, which appeared to be going so well, without warning even to the eye or to instruments of any kind, just blew apart in the air.
Does NASA plan any kind of an announcement, or is that sort of a constant process at this time?
At this point, we're getting intermittent reports from Mission Control, Dick, but they're not really adding too terribly much new information each time. There's no broad revelation at all other than what we already know.
Chris Glenn reporting from the Cape. Gene Craven was watching the launch from the third floor roof of the University of Florida, 150 miles away.
I knew that something was seriously wrong, having seen several liftoffs before, because on a clear day we would have been able to watch the flame of the booster for much longer. So we just saw the explosion and then flame going in three directions and then nothing but the smoke from the exhaust.
In Washington, President Reagan was quickly told of the terrible event. Gary Schuster reports from the White House.
White House spokesman Larry Speake said President Reagan was informed of the accident at a meeting with aides in the Oval Office. He immediately went to his adjoining study and watched television reruns of the liftoff and the explosion.
The president was stood there in almost stunned silence as he watched the television. You could certainly read the concern, the sorrow, the anxiety on his face as he watched.
Speaks said he didn't believe the accident would deter the American space exploration program. The presidential spokesman also said he didn't expect the accident to affect Mr. Reagan's State of the Union address tonight, except that the president would certainly make reference to the accident. Gary Schuster, CBS News, the White House.
A friend of Krista McAuliffe, New Hampshire high school principal Chris Rath, said amid all the excitement and preparation for the mission, no one gave much thought to the potential dangers.
There's been a great deal of activity focused on the shuttle. We built an ice cream shuttle, and the kids built an ice sculpture shuttle, and we know the ins and outs of a shuttle, and throughout all of that, no one thought about that, I don't think, in terms of it is a dangerous expedition. It's still a frontier, and we haven't mastered it, and we saw that today.
Recapping the story, the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded about 1 minute after liftoff from Cape Canaveral and plunged into the Atlantic Ocean some 60 miles from the launch pad. The fate of the seven-member crew, including teacher Krista McAuliffe, is unknown. But it's unlikely that any of those on board the Shuttle Challenger could have survived. I'm Dick Reeves, CBS News.
Now, direct from CBS News, this Radio Net Alert Bulletin.
This is Mitchell Krause in New York. Stunned disbelief, tragedy, disaster. Cape Canaveral, the flight of the Space Shuttle Challenger. Moments after liftoff today, as you may have heard, it exploded in a giant fireball, apparently killing all the seven crew members aboard. Although there is no definite word on the fate of the crew, rescuers are at the scene. It was difficult to reach the scene, for debris fell for some 45 minutes after the explosion in space. Christopher Glenn is at the Cape. We'll be talking with him in moments on the status of the rescue effort now underway. Of course, the President and all members of the Congress and the Space Agency, the United States government, and I'm sure the people of the United States were shocked and saddened by this disaster at the Cape. The first time in flight in 56 United States manned space missions that there was a disaster and there was death. And ironically, just the other day was the 19th anniversary of the disaster on the ground that killed several astronauts. But that was the first time we had a disaster, and never in the air had a space shuttle encountered this difficulty. Krista McAuliffe was, of course, aboard that flight, the first citizen in space, the first teacher in space, and she was thrilled when she accepted her choice as the first private citizen to fly on the shuttle. It's from her White House speech.
It's not often that a teacher is at a loss for words. I know my students wouldn't think so. I've made 9 wonderful friends over the last 2 weeks. And when that shuttle goes, they might be one body. But there's going to be 10 souls that I'm taking with me. Thank you.
That's great.
Parents of the New Hampshire teacher, of course, were on the scene at the Cape when the disaster occurred. They stared in utter disbelief as they watched the shuttle explode. There was cheering before the explosion, there was happiness, and then, oh my God, oh no, said one. And with looks of shock, the Corrigans, Edward and Grace Corrigan of Framingham, Massachusetts, the parents of Krista McAuliffe, were taken to another room by NASA officials. Christopher Glenn is at the Cape, and Chris, what's the latest that you have?
In the last few minutes, Mitchell, very little from NASA itself. They have put a few additional details on the story, but nothing major other than what is already speculated, which is that perhaps one of the two solid rocket boosters that help propel the spacecraft toward its orbit and then are designed to fall away at a certain point in the launch sequence separated from the main rocket assembly prematurely and therefore caused the rest of it to go haywire. And of course it's uncontrollable with that mighty thrust coming out of all those rocket engines, and it was very quickly over. Still unknown is whether the orbiter itself somehow survived the explosion, and somehow, it would have to have been a miracle, managed to make an aerodynamic glide back into the ocean and ditch there, as planes can do. They can ditch in the ocean, but this was from a tremendous height, and it happened all at once without any advance warning, and it's not even clear whether the ground teams or the computers on the ground were able to get the rest of the rocket separated from the orbiter itself so that it would be possible for Commander Francis Scobie to have made a maneuver like that and tried to ditch at sea. At any rate, the rescue teams that are out in the impact area now, about 60 miles offshore, we're seeing some NASA cameras showing us pictures of the surface of the water, showing no visible chunks of debris, but showing some chemical smears on the surface of the water, and that's about all we know right at the moment. I do have with me once again, Mitchell, James Rivers of WKXL in Concord, New Hampshire, and Jim, of course, has been on the phone up there with them constantly since this tragedy occurred, and Jim, what can you add to the story from Concord now?
Actually, Chris, there are two points coming out of the city of Concord right now. High school principal Charles Foley closed off Concord High School to the media moments after it had happened, and his faculty and staff are meeting to offer counseling to the student body or to any members of the faculty that feel that they need counseling to help them get through this day. Our reporters from CBS affiliate WKXL in Concord on the street are finding that the people of Concord really don't want to talk about it. The mood on Main Street and in the stores, where very little activity is going on right now, people are walking around with their heads bowed and really, as you might understand, not wanting to talk to reporters and just sitting back and waiting.
You told us earlier, didn't you, that this was a day of great celebration at Concord High School, that the student body and the faculty had gathered in the auditorium in front of a large screen TV and were celebrating the apparently successful launch in its first minute. What happened when they realized that something was going wrong up there?
Dead silence in talking with members of the faculty at Concord High School. Harvey Smith, whose classroom is wired by NASA and was going to originate the question and answer series with Krista McAuliffe on Friday now, was in the auditorium, and I have spoken with him, and he said it was just all of a sudden as if you turned the volume switch on something off. It was silence altogether all at once, and then Mr. Foley addressed the student body, and they filed out very quietly, leaving behind all of their paraphernalia.
Krista McAuliffe, of course, had planned to teach two brief lessons from space to a nationwide radio and television hookup to schools around the country, which was to have been provided by the Public Broadcasting Service. The first of those was to have been a sort of the grand tour of the space shuttle. The ultimate field trip was, I think, what she had entitled her lesson plan. And the second was where we are, where we're going, why we're in space, that kind of thing. And she had said long before the flight that what she really wanted to do, the real reason that she wanted to go into space, was to demystify NASA and spaceflight. She wanted to show ordinary people and generations of young Americans that there was a place for them in space and a reason that they should be going there. And I think her words are ironic and especially tragic today, given the scope of this disaster, which we have seen before. Again, Jim, you mentioned, and I wonder if you could tell us once more about the plans for special counseling for the kids at Concord High, if any of them have psychological difficulty with the tragedy.
Well, Chris, this is, as I indicated earlier, there had been a tragedy at the high school earlier with a young student who had been involved in a shooting that many of the students witnessed, and it required counseling, and Charles Foley, the principal at Concord High, had gotten together his staff, and many students did go to the counseling. Now, on a much grander scale, with most all of the student body in the auditorium viewing this, I guess there is going to be a need for some counseling. It will be offered through the school. The school has been dismissed as of 1 o'clock this afternoon for the student body to go home and be with their loved ones and be with their families. But once the school bells ring again in Concord, there are going to be some students who will want to just talk it out. And the question, again, is why this all happened. Even Kristen herself said, I want to prove that it's a safe place to be, that it's just as safe as walking across the street.
Let me interrupt you, Chris, for a moment, and Jim Rivers. We have Jake Garn, the senator from Utah, who flew in space and was aboard one of the shuttles, and we'll go now to Washington for that.
Well, it's very difficult for me to talk about it because these were my friends. Mike Smith, the pilot, was my mother hen the first month that I trained. They assigned him to me, go to my classes and help brief me. And I don't know of any time that I have been more shocked or more moved than when my first wife was killed in an automobile accident. And so it's been very, very difficult for me this morning.
What does this do to the space program here and its support on the Hill, Senator?
Well, I have great confidence in the space program. I think it's a remarkable system. And I think we should push ahead after we have determined the cause. Obviously, we should not fly until we have determined the cause of this particular failure. But I think we need to look at all of the successes, the remarkable safety record that the space program has had, the benefits that come from it. And the crew members that I knew so well, I would expect that they would want us to go ahead with the space program after we have gone through the proper investigations and analysis and know what happened.
How should we go about investigating this?
Well, obviously, you have to gather all of the data. It has been impounded at this point. There'll have to be a lot of studies, but there are some superbly qualified experts in this area that I think will be able to determine what the failure was.